down by the grassroots and who had the number one record this week in 1971. Turn it up this weekend for Greatest Hits USA right here.
Tune in every Saturday right after the news at noon here on WISR 680.
Greatest Hits USA.
I'm Tracy Morgan. Dave Malarkey is coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
Now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Once again, everyone, welcome. Nice to be with us on the Friday at last edition of It's Your Turn. Seemed like a long week to you? Yeah. Pat Parker, our engineer on the other side of the glass, who's shaking his head. I think everybody would agree it's been a long week because of the heat, right? Yeah. And we're really going to get it today and tomorrow. I mean, we haven't seen anything yet in terms of hot weather. We had some storms, what was it, Wednesday, right? Yeah, because we had five straight days of dry weather. Everybody was saying, it's a miracle. And then we had storms and some pretty good downpours, actually, on Wednesday. Dried out yesterday, and now Mother Nature really turns up the burners here for today and tomorrow. We're going to be talking about how to deal with the heat. We have several guests that are going to join us on the program today. And in just a couple of moments, we'll be chatting with Mike Butler from the CEA. And that's the Consumer Energy Alliance. And we'll get some tips on keeping cool and also keeping your electric bill down. That's another factor with, you know, air conditioners running all the time and everything. Keeping your electric bill down during heat waves like this. We'll probably have more of these as we move through the tail end of July and certainly August, the dog days of August. So we'll get some tips from Mike Butler coming up here in just a couple of moments. Also, we're going to be talking, this is an interesting human interest story. There's work going on this summer at Slippery Rock University involving geoscientists, they study geology, rocks, taking a closer look at the cooling history of rock samples from Canada, specifically from Ontario. We'll find out what that's all about. We'll talk with a professor of geology at Slippery Rock University, and that's Professor Michael Zieg, who will join us, and we'll also talk with one of his students. Her name is Logan McIntyre. She's studying geoscience, among other things, at Slippery Rock University, and she's involved in this research that's going on this summer. So we'll talk to the two of them a little bit later on the program. And then we're going to be talking about different cultures and etiquette in different cultures, different countries around the world. And this is kind of interesting, whether whether you're planning to go abroad or not, even if you're never planning to go abroad, it's kind of interesting to hear about the different customs and you know, the way different people in different countries look at things. For example, there are some places in the world where it's polite to burp after a meal. It's not so polite here in our culture, if you do that, even accidentally, you know, you usually say, excuse me, or something like that. There are places where you're expected to do that. We'll be talking with a cultural etiquette expert, believe it or not. His name is Dean Foster. He's written about this, still does, as a matter of fact, for National Geographic Traveler magazine, and he is a world traveler, so he'll be joining us by telephone today. We got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about here. We'll take a quick break, and we'll chat with our first guest, Mike Butler, coming up on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn, right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Going to be talking about the heat wave and how to keep cool and cut energy costs, too, when we have extreme weather like this. Listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest on this segment of It's Your Turn joins us by telephone. He is Mike Butler. Mike is the Mid-Atlantic Director for CEA, that's the Consumer Energy Alliance. Mike, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
Tell us, before we get some tips from you, just what is the Consumer Energy Alliance, by the way?
Sure. Thank you. Well, we are a national organization, though I'm based in your neck of the woods. I'm in Pittsburgh. I cover, as you mentioned, the Mid-Atlantic, and we advocate for all of the above energy strategies. So if there's potential legislation or regulation that's being proposed, we look at it from what does it mean for affordability and reliability for the consumer. And by consumer, I mean, you know, big U.S. steel mill or your next-door neighbor. And in short, that's what we're all about. We want to make sure that energy is as affordable and accessible as possible.
Well, we certainly are in a heat wave right now. It's not just us, by the way, in western Pennsylvania. Much of the country. Of course, it's always hot in the Southwest at this time of year in Arizona and New Mexico, but the plains, upper plains, the eastern seaboard, New England, certainly here in the middle Atlantic states, we are going to have temperatures in the 90s for the start of the weekend, Friday and Saturday. I guess the heat index value today here in Butler is estimated to be as high as 103. That's what it feels like when you're outside. That's what that heat index value means.
Yes, it sure does, and I'm out and about today, and I feel it already, so we certainly have a couple of days here.
Well, give us some tips on how to keep cool, Mike Butler, when we get a heat wave like this. What can we do?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a number of things you can do in your home that will not only keep you a little cooler, but also maybe save you a few bucks, and most of them are pretty simple things. For one, you can cover the windows, heavy curtains or blinds. Keep the sun rays out of the house. Will keep your place a little cooler. Another one that is an easy one, if you can turn down your water temperature on your water heater. Water heaters often consume about 18% of your household energy costs. So that's a big one. If you can keep that running at a little lower point, that certainly helps.
Never thought about that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could save some money there. Look for air leaks. So if you got pipes or a chimney or any outlets like that, try to cover those up. That'll keep, if you have air conditioning, that'll keep the air from seeping out, and that'll save you some money. Or if you just have fans in your house that keeps the cooler air inside instead of trying to cool down the outside. Another thing that, if you can avoid it, don't use the oven. You can cook on a stove or throw something on the grill. That'll help keep your place cooler. Those ovens generate quite a bit of heat.
What about other heat-producing appliances, Mike Butler? I'm thinking of clothes dryers, for example. They produce a lot of heat.
Yeah, clothes dryers, washing machines, dryers, as you mentioned, all those produce a lot of heat, use a lot of energy. So, like a dishwasher, if you can turn off the dry cycle, that'll save some money. That gives off less energy. For a washing machine, use only warm or cold water settings instead of going back and forth. And if possible, You know, things you don't have to put in a dryer. You can, you know, put your clothes out on the line. You know, that those are all tips to use that, again, give off less heat and ultimately will save you a few dollars. Also, when you leave the house, you know, adjust the temperature. Don't keep it, don't keep your air conditioner blowing as if you're still there. You know, let the temperature raise a little bit and you always lower it when you get back home.
I've heard about closing the drapes or the blinds, and that really, I mean, people may not think that would do much, but that really has a great effect, does it not? Keeping the direct sunlight out of your room.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Covering those windows is big. Again, it's not something you think about, but yeah, that's keeping direct sunlight out of your house, and that it will make a big difference if you consistently do that.
What about ceiling fans? Over the last decade or so, I mean, we used to see these a lot back in the days before air conditioning, but I know a lot of people in my circle of acquaintances, even with air conditioning, that have ceiling fans sometimes in several rooms. Are they effective, Mike Butler?
They certainly are. They certainly are. That is a great way to go. Again, ceiling fans, you know, it's cheaper than air conditioning, so you can, again, save some money, but they're a great way to move and keep the air circulating throughout the house, and you would certainly notice a big difference if you have ceiling fans, or even portable fans, as opposed to not having them at all in your house.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you have whole house air conditioning, there's not much you can do unless you have one of the new fancy thermostats room by room. But if you've got a window air conditioner or one of those portable air conditioners that have become popular in recent years, you can only air condition parts of the house that you're going to use, and I mean, close off the doors in the other rooms, right?
Yes, absolutely, and that's a great. I mean, that's a great money saving tip. Anytime you're trying to utilize energy, the more you can contain it to a certain space. So, if you know, hey, John, I'm not going to be upstairs today, and you can only cool the downstairs, that's a great way to go. Or vice versa, you know, you're, hey, I'm asleep now, so I'm going to cool this room, let the rest of the house warm up. That's just a very smart smart way to proceed here in the summer.
When you get a heat wave like this, Mike, and you're running the air conditioner, in many cases nonstop, some people might not realize just how much an air conditioner, even a window or a portable air conditioner, can jack up your electric bill, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hundreds of dollars. That's why I mentioned earlier, if you know you're going out to catch the ball game or movie, let the house warm up. Don't run the air conditioning like you're still there. You know, it might be a little warmer than you like when you walk in, but you can reset that and it'll be okay in no time. But those few hours or many hours that you could, use less air conditioning, that'll save you money. You may not notice it over the course of one day, but over the course of 3 months in the summer, it's hundreds of dollars.
And if you get thousands and tens of hundreds of thousands of people using air conditioning, that is a big draw on electricity, and that can stress the power grid. Heaven forbid that we get power outages during this heat wave, but that is a definite possibility, is it not?
Sure. I mean, we have been very fortunate. We have not had too many of those circumstances in a while, but yeah, that can happen. I mean, the grid, as you know, we're all kind of at the mercy of how that operates. If anything would happen, if there's a surge in real demand, we could be certainly in jeopardy of having power outages. That's why, as part of things with CA is about, is make sure we always have good policies in place to minimize those occurrences. But yeah, when everyone has cranking up the air conditioning, that puts real strain on the system.
Yeah, I've read wire stories where some people might think it's in the wintertime, January when it's freezing below zero, that's when you're using the most energy. Actually, it's in the summer when you get a heat wave like this and you're running the AC all the time.
Yeah, that's right. In the residential use of the summer is peak, and it puts just the same type of strain on our systems as it can in the winter. So anytime we have an occurrence that is going to demand peak energy performance, there's always that jeopardy.
One other quick note, might be a little too late for this particular heat wave, but we're going to have more of this as we move through July and August. You want to check the filters, right, in your air conditioning system, Mike?
Yeah, anything you do, check your filters. That helps a great deal, but any regular maintenance you have on any of your air-conditioning things to make sure that they're operating at peak performance. You don't want to have any drain. It hurts your budget when your equipment's not operating properly. But the filters and the air conditioning is big, and those should be replaced fairly frequently, and you'll see a real difference if you do that consistently.
Some tips on how to keep cool and this is important, cut your energy costs as this heat wave closes in, and we deal with that this weekend, especially today and tomorrow.
It's a win-win. If you're cooler and you're saving $2, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mike Butler is the Mid-Atlantic Director for the Consumer Energy Alliance. Thanks for the tips, Mike. Nice to talk with you today.
Thanks. Good talking to you, too.
Sure. Tips there on keeping cool and keeping your electric bill down during this heat wave. Outside here in the Butler area right now, it's clouded up a bit. We've seen some clouds, and that's probably good news. I mean, it's still going to be hot, but anytime we can, you know, get rid of the sunshine, even for a short period, that's good news. Pretty cloudy right now. We continue on with It's Your Turn in just a moment or so. We'll be chatting next with a professor at Slippery Rock University. His name is Michael Zieg. He's professor of geology and geography at The Rock, and we're going to be talking about some interesting research work that is going on at Slippery Rock during these summer months. That's coming up in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today, Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They package your items for shipping. Very convenient, very affordable, too, by the way, and very fast. I've utilized their services. Pretty neat. You don't have to hunt around for the right size box or envelope or bubble wrap or mailing labels or any of that. You can never find that when you need it. Just take your items up to Gone Postal Butler, and they'll package them up for you and ship them out any way you want, by the way. You want to send them UPS or FedEx or U.S. Postal Service, your choice. They'll handle it. Gone Postal Butler is located in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. It's right behind the Kings and Villa Grande restaurants on Newcastle Road here in Butler. Just go into the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, follow the signs, and there you are. They're open Monday through Friday. You can call Gone Postal Butler if you need more information on their services, 724-841-0044. By the way, they have some other services too. They do copying, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. They even have an official notary. You need to get something notarized before it's shipped out. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
When it's time to choose a funeral home, there are many things to consider. The facility itself, does it provide the atmosphere that the occasion requires? Are they people I can comfortably talk with about the kind of services I need? Is the cost within my budget? Should we consider cremation? There are so many questions. Let Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler help you with some answers. After all, Thompson Miller has been serving the Butler community since 1927. The same family has been serving Butler for 92 years. They are, in many ways, truly a part of our community. Thompson Miller provides complete services with dignity in the funeral home, at gravesite, and for entombment. Thompson Miller will help you through the process with advice, counsel, experience, and compassion. Call us and we'll help you make these important and sensitive decisions. 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit us online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Interesting human interest story coming up, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're joined by Professor Michael Zieg at Slippery Rock University. He is a professor of geography and genealogy at Slippery Rock. Professor Zieg, nice to have you with us here today, sir.
Thank you for having me.
We wanted to talk with you because geoscientists at Slippery Rock University are taking a closer look at the cooling history of some Canadian rock samples. Is this something that's done during the summer, or when does this take place? During the regular school year, Professor?
We do a little bit of work during the summer, but or during the school year, but during the summer, there's more time for both the students and the faculty to really dedicate to research. So most of it happens during the summer.
One of the students involved is Logan McIntyre, and we'll be talking with her a little bit later, but we wanted to first get a little background information on this from Professor Zieg. So these rock samples are from Canada. What part of Canada, sir?
It's near Nipigon. It's on the north shore of Lake Superior. So it's a pretty good drive. It's about 8 or 10 hours north of Sault Ste. Marie.
Nipigon is how you pronounce it?
Yes, yes.
It's in Ontario. Sounds like a Native American Indian name, which there are a lot of in Ontario.
Yes, your listeners may find it interesting. Nipigon is where Paddle to the Sea is about. That's where that book, where the little canoe is put in the water. It starts at Nipigon.
So for the casual observer who might be in this area and they're driving along the Trans-Canada Highway, they might see a rock wall shouldering the highway and think nothing of it, but this is kind of special. Why, sir? Why is it?
So as I was first driving along there about 16 years ago, what I noticed was a stripe of black rock, which was very unusual, and then it actually looks like a coal seam, but the rock there are way too old. There's no coal around there. So I knew that it had to be a igneous rock. It's called diabase. And it's the same kind of rock that is erupting from Hawaii. And so it was interesting to see that kind of rock up in a place like Canada.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. Last year there was a spectacular eruption of volcano in Hawaii, and it's black, right? This igneous rock is black.
Yes, very black.
So that's why you spotted it in this particular, along the side of the road on this rock wall. When you spot something like this, you as a geologist, do you have to seek permission from the Canadian government to do a little further research here, or can you just, get out of your car and pick up a few rocks?
Usually I just stop and pick up some rocks. In the United States also, if it's just a road cut along a public highway, usually there's no problem with just collecting a rock here or there.
I can remember when I was in undergraduate school, I took an elective course. It was kind of on a whim. Believe it or not, it was Geology 101. It was obviously just a survey course, an introductory course. But it was fascinating, and to this day, I'm thankful that I took it. This particular outcrop in Ontario that you spotted is an example of a sill, S-I-L-L. Can you explain that term for our listeners?
Sure. So, as I mentioned, this is the same kind of rock as is erupting from the volcanoes in Hawaii. What a sill is when that magma, the molten rock, is caught and trapped underground, and it cools and solidifies as a horizontal layer. So it gets its name just like a door sill. It's a flat, tabular body of rock that the magma was trapped underground, and it didn't make it to the surface to erupt as lava.
You said when you saw this black seam, you knew that it couldn't be coal because it was much earlier than that. Do we have any approximate date when this may have happened, this cooling and crystallization of the magma?
Yes. It was around 1.1 billion years ago.
Ooh, wow. That's billion with a B?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. When you first spotted this, you were doing graduate work, I believe. Were you not? Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I did my graduate work in... My main focus was in Sudbury, Ontario. I was looking at some igneous rocks there that had formed during a meteorite impact. And I would spend my summers during graduate school up there in Ontario, and I would just drive around just on the weekends just to see what I could find. And so just as a geologist, I always keep my eyes open. A lot of times I watch the rock, perhaps more than the road. Sometimes I'm a better passenger than a driver, maybe, because I'm just looking to see what kind of rocks are around, seeing if there's something unusual.
Are there any examples of igneous rock here in western Pennsylvania, or no?
No, not in western Pennsylvania, but in eastern Pennsylvania, Gettysburg, the Battle of Gettysburg was fought on a sill, very much like the ones that we're studying up in Canada. So the Little Round Top, Cemetery Ridge, that was a sill. That was in place when North America and Africa rifted apart.
One of the majors at Slippery Rock University nowadays is environmental geoscience. That sounds like a little bit more specialized than just majoring in geology. Would I be correct on that?
Well, it's a little bit more general. A lot of our students are interested in more classical geology, but we have students who also have an interest in applying their geological knowledge to environmental problems. So the major environmental geoscience gives them the flexibility to choose a more traditional geology, where maybe we do oil or mining or, you know, classical geology, or a more environmental approach where we look at, say, groundwater contamination and how your well water would interact with the rocks in the subsurface.
Study of rocks and the history of them and formations and the other. I can remember when I took that survey course, one of the things the professor said, or one of the places that he said to look for it is on road cuts, for example, along interstate highways, where they sometimes had to make huge road cuts. I know along Interstate 80, especially as you get into central Pennsylvania, where you get into some of the mountains, it's pretty easy to spot some of these, I'm trying to remember the term, Professor, synclines and anti-synclines. Am I remembering that correct?
You get an A.
But you can still see them along, so be observant when you're driving along the interstate, right?
Absolutely.
Can be an amateur geologist. Professor, I know you've got a busy day today. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to chat with us about this. It's a good story.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So long now.
Bye.
Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler, Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 south at Thorncrest Drive. Continuing our discussion, we chatted with Professor Michael Zieg at Slippery Rock University about this work that's going on this summer, looking at the cooling history of Canadian rock samples. And a student who is participating in this project is Logan McIntyre, and she joins us now on It's Your Turn. And by the way, if you're just joining us, listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey. Logan is with us on the phone. Logan, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are, first of all, you're a junior at Slippery Rock University. Am I correct on that?
Yes, I'll be the junior in the fall.
And what's your major? What are you studying?
So my first major is geology, and then my second major is professional Spanish.
Oh, dual major. That's a tough load to carry when you're an undergraduate school.
Yeah, I'm pretty busy.
Yeah, I can imagine. And working this summer, too, but on a fascinating project, looking at the cooling history of Canadian rock samples. So you're doing this work this summer on the campus of Slippery Rock University. What are you looking for? How do you do this? Do you have a microscope or something? How do you do it, Logan?
So first we had these rocks that were cut into very thin sections and then put in between pieces of glass. So then we took those down to IUP because they just got a scanning electron microscope. And so we were able to magnify that up to, you know, it can magnify up to 50,000 times, but we were working at a lower magnification, usually about 200 times, that we could track the crystal size as you move throughout the sill. And then by comparing those crystal sizes, you can see, okay, this part cooled faster, this part cooled slower, and here's the rate of cooling as a whole.
Hmm. We talked earlier with Professor Zieg about this, the magma, the molten rock that cools to form igneous rock, this black rock. And you're trying to determine just how quickly it happened. What does the chemistry of the rock change somehow as it cools, Logan?
It's not so much the chemistry of the rock. It's more of the fact that the rate at which a rock cools determines the sizes of the crystals. So the composition throughout the entire rock is pretty much the same. It's just because there's different minerals in that molten magma, if it cools at certain temperatures, some of them will crystallize faster and form bigger crystals than others. So, for example, we were tracing the size of this one crystal specifically. And so at the top and the bottom of the sill, where it cooled the fastest, crystals are very small, whereas in the middle they're very large. So it's not so much that the chemistry changes, it's just the influence of the cooling time on the crystal size.
And you say you've been able to utilize a scanning electron microscope at IUP. That uses what, reflected light images, as I recall, correct?
Well, we did some reflected light samples a long time ago, but the electron scanning microscope actually shoots a beam of concentrated electrons down at the sample, and then the image that you get back shows the different crystals in the rock at different intensities based on their atomic mass. So the oxide crystals have a heavier mass than, say, for example, the quartz or the plagioclase crystals, so they show up as really, really bright. So that's how we're able to differentiate.
I'm afraid you've gone way beyond my knowledge here, Logan, that's for sure. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from this area, right? Where's your hometown? Where'd you go to high school?
Yeah, well, I was actually born in San Antonio, Texas, but I moved up here in probably 2012 or 2013 because my dad has a business here, so I live in Vallant, Plain Grove area, right behind the Outlet Mall.
And
I went to New Wilmington for the first year in high school, and then I went to, I think it's called Commonwealth Charter Academy now. It's Pennsylvania's online public school.
I see. Well, you weren't all that far from Slippery Rock University, even when you were in high school then. So what are you going to do after graduation? You're going to be a junior. You will have two more years, I guess, of undergraduate school. Will you go on to graduate studies in geology, or are you not sure yet?
I'm not 100% sure, but I would really love to. Everything comes down to time and money.
Yeah.
So if I can find a good school and I can make that happen financially and, you know, with my family and all of that, because I'm also married now, so I have to plan around my husband and all those kinds of things. So if I can make it happen, I would definitely love to. Otherwise, I mean, I'll just go straight into the workforce. Either way, I think it'll work out.
By the way, through a wonderful a grant program, the Slippery Rock University Summer Collaborative Research Experience. You're actually getting paid to do this work this summer, right?
I am, and it is so great.
You have been interested in rocks all your life? What, rocks, volcanoes, that kind of thing?
Well, I've always thought volcanoes were super fascinating, and I thought it would be a great marriage of geology and my Spanish skills, because there's so many volcanoes in Latin America, there's so much research that could be done in Latin America, and so I thought that was perfect. But when I actually came to Slippery Rock University, I was a communications and marketing major.
Well, you've switched.
Yeah.
That's not uncommon, by the way. A lot of folks change majors. I did midstream. So, yeah, I never thought about volcanoes in South America with your Spanish major along the whole chain of the Andes Mountains, right? That's pretty active territory there for volcanoes here and there.
Yeah, and I mean, even closer, you have, you know, there's so many different tectonic events, like earthquakes that happen in the Caribbean. There's the, you know, Pacific Ring of Fire. A ton of that is South America. And then there's also lots of volcanoes, earthquakes in Mexico, which is a lot closer than, you know, say, Chile or something like that. So there's, I think, a lot of opportunities for me in that sort of realm.
Just had an earthquake in Greece today. I haven't heard any reports of, hopefully there were no injuries or anything, but somewhere near Athens they had a trembler here today. And as a geologist, you, of course, would be interested in that. Matter of fact, you say, and for a lot of folks, I mean, this, you think it might sound corny, you think it's fun to look at rocks. It's beautiful to look at rocks, right?
I do. I asked Dr. Zieg if he could print one out for me, poster size, so I could put it in my room.
I like to look at rocks. Well, listen, I know you're at work, and I'm taking you away from that, but I do appreciate chatting with you for a couple of minutes. This is a great human interest story, and good luck as you continue to work on this through the summer, and whatever your chosen career path may be, best of luck to you, Logan McIntyre. Thanks for chatting with us today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to someone about kind of this nerdy topic. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a wonderful story. Our pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good day.
And you. Fascinating, isn't it, to find out about this sort of work going on at Slippery Rock University, for goodness sakes. Here in our area, we thank Professor Michael Zieg. And obviously, Logan McIntyre there, both involved in this project during the summer months. Looking at rocks from Canada, from Ontario, and determining how quickly they cooled and crystal formation and all that stuff. Some high-tech scientific research going on at Slippery Rock this summer. Okay, we still have more to come on the program today. I mentioned earlier that clouds had kind of moved in here in the Butler area, and we're back to sunshine right now, so it's been a little bit back and forth. Our temperature has now climbed to 85 degrees. We're still looking to be in the 90s at some point this afternoon. And this time of year, of course, we often don't hit our high for the day until sometimes 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. In fact, that's usually when we do have the high for the day here in the heat of the summer in late July. 85 degrees right now. We do have a little bit of a breeze. In fact, it's kind of windy out there. At least that keeps the air moving. It's hot air, but keeps it moving anyway. We're going to be talking about cultural etiquette in different parts of the world and how it can differ drastically, how something that's very polite and the right thing to do here in America might be totally wrong in some other parts of the world. We'll be chatting with a cultural etiquette expert. He's written for National Geographic magazine. His name is Dean Foster. He'll be visiting with us in just a moment here. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller Shoes, celebrating 126 years. Boy, you talk about a tradition. Yeah, they've been around here for 126 years. Lots of great summer footwear available at Miller's Shoes, including SAS sandals. This is the SAS Comfort Shoe Company. Their shoes are like bedroom slippers. They're so comfortable. They make sandals, too, in a variety of different styles and colors. So stop up and take a look. Slip a pair on. You'll marvel at how comfortable they are. Most sandals are not real comfortable. These are. SAS, your headquarters for SAS shoes and sandals, here in Butler is Miller's Shoes. Also, they've got athletic shoes, tennis shoes for the whole family, adults, teens, kids, men, women. All your famous name brands are there under one roof. Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Kedge, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, Pro-Pet. They've got them all at Miller's Shoes. And they've got famous brand name shoes, too. Timberland shoes and boots, Trotters, Rockport, Hush Puppies. And they've always got lots of pairs of men's and ladies' shoes on sale on racks for easy browsing. Stop in, say hi to Jimmy Chiprian and the rest of the family. You'll find good bargains and great selection and always that famous Miller's Fit. Miller's Shoes, They're at 215 South Main Street, right in the heart of downtown Butler. Miller's Shoes.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Hey, folks, nice to have you with us on It's Your Turn today. Dave Malarkey is my name. We're going to be talking about going on vacation or a summer adventure or travel anytime, especially if you're going abroad. We want to talk about etiquette abroad. And it could be quite different in other countries. There could hardly be a better person to discuss this issue than Dean Foster, who joins us by telephone today. Dean, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us.
And nice to be here, Dave. Thanks so much to speak.
Dean Foster is a world culture expert. He's also a host of the podcast, Oops, Your Culture is Showing. Hey, I've checked out a couple of your podcasts, Dean. They're not only very informative, but they're pretty funny. You do those with a lot of humor, do you not?
Well, I think talking about culture is fun, and it's interesting. I think we're always fascinated by cultural differences. And while cultural differences also create a lot of challenges for us, we can also enjoy them. And, you know, there's nothing more fascinating, I think, than the range of human behaviors that we can encounter when we travel abroad.
I agree with you. And even if you're not planning a trip abroad, it's just fascinating to learn about some of these cultural differences, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I'm pleased that you're enjoying Oops, Your Culture Showing. We really do want to have fun with cultural differences, and we explore the differences that I've experienced. It's been my privilege to work and travel in over 100 countries around the world. And I've got my stories, and there are others who have their stories, and we like to share them on the podcast.
Dean is the founder of DFA Intercultural Global Solutions. He's worked with many, many companies, many nations, as a matter of fact, on cross-cultural training and consulting. He's also on the faculty of American University's Intercultural Management Institute. That's in Washington, D.C. Well, if you're a business traveler, especially, Dean, it's more than just being polite. I mean, you can really do some damage if you happen to do the wrong thing, make the wrong hand gesture, something like that, correct?
Absolutely. You know, when we travel and do business abroad, I think the stakes are pretty high that we've got to understand the cultural differences we're going to encounter. People do business differently. They think differently. They communicate differently. Negotiation styles are different. The way people are expected to relate with each other in business is different. And it changes as you cross borders. And so it's naive to think that we can just go out there and do business with these folks without understanding that these differences exist. There's a lot of money riding on these deals. Sometimes we're talking about multi-million-dollar projects. And if we don't get the cultural piece correct, eventually these deals will be undermined. So the return on the investment is just at risk if you don't understand the culture.
Let's talk a little bit about, for example, gift giving. There are different cultures around the world where that is accepted, where it's expected, and where it would be a real mistake not to do it, right?
Absolutely. It changes, as I said, culture by culture. In some cultures, giving a gift is almost suspect. It looks kind of like a bribe, and so we actually have laws that prevent us from doing that. In the U.S., we're pretty pretty careful about that stuff. But then you go to some other cultures, and the gift is really a way of ensuring the relationship. Of it's stating that we have an ongoing relationship, that we'll trust each other. And we're honoring that relationship by giving a gift. And so when you give a gift, what kind of a gift, how you give it, who you give it to, even how you wrap it, these things change country by country. I remember one time there was this U.S. fellow who was doing business in China, and he wanted to give his Chinese colleague a gift. And he knew that the Chinese fellow was loved antiques. So he found these four beautiful antique clocks, and he put them in a box, and he wrapped the box in white paper, and he sent it over to his Chinese colleague. Now, everything about what he did was wrong, because the clock in Chinese culture is really not appreciated. It's a bad symbol. A clock, the word for clock in Chinese sounds very much like the Chinese word for death. So you don't send a clock as a gift. And then to send four items of anything is really bad, because the number four also is very unlucky in Chinese culture. Four also sounds like the word for death. And then to wrap it in a box with white wrapping was really wrong, because the color white in Chinese culture is a funeral color, like black is in the West. So I can imagine the shock of on the face of the Chinese fellow who received this gift and opened it up, because the message was anything but honoring the relationship.
Let's talk about food and different etiquette with regard to dining around the globe. Can you give us, our listeners, some interesting or funny stories about that, Dean?
Well, that's happened to me and many, many people. You know, you just, again, it changes country by country, and the things you assume here just may not be the same there. I remember one time walking into a Japanese noodle shop in Tokyo. It was lunchtime. All of the office workers were hustling around looking to go to their favorite places for lunch. You know, Tokyo is a big, crowded international city. And I walked into this noodle shop, and I opened the door, and I was attacked by the sound of everybody slurping. And it seemed strange to me, because I remember growing up in the U.S., and my mom would always say to me, you know, chew with your mouth closed and don't make noise when you eat. And here I was entering this restaurant, and all I heard was this enormous sound of slurping. Well, that's because in Japan, it's believed that your noodles will taste better if you slurp. So go ahead and slurp your noodles. That's perfectly fine.
Another pretty amazing cultural difference here in the United States. In our culture, you know, it's considered very impolite to burp, at least audibly, after a meal. In fact, if some folks do that accidentally, it's all, excuse me, I'm sorry. You say there are some countries where actually you're supposed to, that's the polite thing to do after a meal?
Yes, most definitely in Korea and in many other East Asian cultures, that's the polite thing to do, because it indicates to your host that you've enjoyed the food, that you're digesting it well. And so if you don't do that, the host is going to kind of wonder, well, did you like the food or not? And related to that is the idea that in East Asia, if you eat all the food that's on your plate, you're going to get more, because it's a sign to your host that you're still hungry. But again, in the West, I remember being told, now eat everything on your plate, because you don't want to waste food. But if you do that in Asia, you'll keep getting more food, and you have to leave something on your plate as an indication that you're full and you've had enough.
Fascinating stuff. In Germany, folks, guys in particular, don't pull open the door of a restaurant and hold it open for your female companion to go in first.
And again, I think, you know, in the U.S., we're raised, hold the door, gentlemen, hold the door open and let the women go in first. But in Germany, it's just the opposite. The man holds the door open, but then he goes in first and she follows him. And the reason for that is because back in the old days, during the medieval times, going back hundreds of years now, if a man entered what was then a restaurant with a woman, the first thing he'd have to do is go in first and clean the place out of all the ruffians that might be in there to make it safe for the woman to then enter. And that tradition has just continued even to this day.
We're talking with Dean Foster. He's a world culture expert. And we're talking about how not to offend anyone on your trip abroad or your vacation or your business trip. Cultural etiquette around the world is the subject of discussion with Dean Foster. So, okay, Germany, you know, most folks don't speak German. Some may, but what about if you're going to the United Kingdom, to England or Great Britain? You know, most people would think that's probably the culture closest to us, but there are differences there, right, between the Brits and the Yanks.
Absolutely, and they'll be the first to tell you about that. And that's a great point, Dave. You don't have to travel to an exotic or culture that's very, very different from your own. You can sometimes just travel to one that's quite similar. And the U.S. and the U.K., we're linked historically and linguistically. We kind of sort of speak the same language. So you would intuitively think, most people, that there aren't going to be that many differences. And the truth is there probably aren't as many differences between Britons and Americans, between Yanks and Brits, as there are between, let's say, U.S. Americans and Namibians, right? But differences that do exist are still critical, and so we have to watch out for them. I remember a friend of mine told the story of going into a British pub in London, and it was a crowded pub, and it was very noisy, and he wanted to get the attention of the bartender. So he couldn't speak to the bartender, but what he did is he raised his hands, using hand gestures, which are very helpful when you can't communicate with your voice, and he gave the bartender the V for victory sign, which is the first and second finger held up, to indicate that he wanted two beers. But he did it in such a way where his palm was facing him as opposed to facing the bartender. And just by turning his hand around that way, that became a very vulgar gesture, and it is a very vulgar gesture in the UK.
Wow.
But if you hold the V for victory sign out with your palm forward, then that's okay. But if you do it the other way around, as he did, he's lucky he got his two pints of beer because he could have gotten a punch in the face.
Wow. Who knew, huh? You told
a story. Certainly should have.
Tell a story. It had to be in one of your podcasts that I was listening to about getting sardines on a plate in Portugal. Could you share that with our listeners?
Yes, I was in sunny Portugal. I was doing work for some U.S.-based clients who needed cultural information about working with teams of Portuguese. Because, again, the work styles are going to be different, and there's money riding on the deal, right? So I came over and tried to help the U.S. Americans and the Portuguese to come up with a common style of work. And I had a lovely opportunity to have some lunch one day on a beachside cafe, and I sat down and ordered some sardines, which is a very popular dish in Portugal. And it's a sunny, bright day, and I'm enjoying my sardines and a nice glass of cold white wine. And when the sardines finally came over, all of the sardines were whole. They had the heads and the fins and everything, and I didn't want that, so I cut that off. And then suddenly I was surrounded by all of the cats in Portugal. They were all at my feet. And, of course, these cats were wisely waiting for somebody to come and get rid of the heads and the rest of the sardines that they didn't want to eat. But the cats were willing to devour them. So that's what I did. I threw them on the ground, and all the cats ate them, and we all together had a lovely lunch.
Well, I'm not a sardine man, I must tell you. I think might have ordered something else. But this happens in other countries where something that is an honored dish or, you know, very exclusive might not appeal to American tastes, I guess.
That's right. That's right. And if that happens, you know, I think it's important to try it, to show that you're respecting the effort at hospitality that's being done. But at the same time, if you really can't, well, then what you do is say something that recognizes the effort at hospitality. So, for example, but you don't have to eat it. Like, I remember one time I was at a Chinese banquet, and at the Chinese banquet, they bring out the fish becomes the honored dish. When the fish comes out, you know that that's the special height of the banquet. Lots of other dishes will precede it, but then the whole fish comes out. And the honored part of the fish is right by the cheeks, by the gills of the fish, the head of the fish. And that's usually given to the honored guest. So they brought out this fish, and they cut off the head, and they placed the head on my plate. And I really didn't want to eat the head of the fish. It just was not my favorite. But this is supposed to be the tastiest part. So what I did is I said to my host, I understand that in your culture, this, it's an honor to eat the head of the fish, but it is unusual in my culture. So let me pass this honor on to someone who can appreciate it in their belly as well as their heart. And I gave it to my Chinese fellow who was sitting next to me. And so that honored the effort at the hospitality that my Chinese hosts were making. But at the same time, it enabled me to recognize that, okay, I was being honored as well.
No one wants to be known as an ugly American when they're traveling abroad, even though they may have all the best intentions. It's pretty easy. Dean, I have nowhere near the travel experience that you have, that's for sure, all over the world. I have been blessed to travel quite a bit through Europe. I can remember the first time I was ever in Paris. I was traveling on my own. I don't speak a word of French. And I was in a restaurant kind of struggling to order with the waiter. Fortunately, there was a seasoned American traveler sitting in the next table who leaned over to me and said, just try a few words, you know, in French. Pepper it with lots of please, s'il vous plaît, and other stuff. He said, give it a try, and there'll be much more understanding. Good advice, I thought, and I've always remembered that.
Absolutely. People like to know that you're making an effort to try to do things in a way that they are comfortable. And then once they see that, they'll try to do the same for you. You know, a lot of Americans go to Paris, for example, and they come back and they say, well, you know, the Parisians are so cold and they're kind of arrogant and they don't talk to you and give you the time of day and things like that. Well, they live in a big international city, so things move pretty quickly there. But, you know, they also, the Parisians, complain about the Americans who walk into the pastry shop and just kind of look around, and then they point to a croissant and they say, how much is this croissant? And they don't say bonjour, they don't say good morning, they don't say comment ça va, they just say, how much is this? Yeah. And for the Parisian is offended by this. Everything changes if you just try to use a few words in French and walk into the shop and say, bonjour, madame, bonjour, monsieur. Then suddenly the atmosphere changes and you'll be taken care of very well.
Our guest listeners, Dean Foster, obviously he's traveled all over the world. He's had more than 100 countries, Dean. Wow. Wow.
You may my clients have sent me wherever they're doing their work. And my work has been to help them and the people that they're working with in those countries to simply work more effectively with each other. So not to misunderstand the cultural differences, but to use those cultural differences so that they can accelerate their success with each other.
You may have seen Dean Foster on CNN or some other television show. He's been interviewed by Newsweek, USA Today, New York Times, many other places. You wrote the Culture-Wise column for the National Geographic Traveler magazine. Do you still do that? Is that magazine still out, Dean?
Oh, absolutely. National Geographic Traveler is still out, and our Culture-Wise column has appeared from time to time. Currently, I'm the author of several books, The Global Etiquette Guide to Europe, The Global Etiquette Guide to Asia, The Global Etiquette Guide to Latin America, and The Global Etiquette Guide to Africa and the Middle East. And in these books, chapter by chapter, we talk about all of these cultural differences, country by country. And you can get that information about my books from going to deanfosterglobal.com.
And I mentioned your podcasts earlier. How do people find them? Do they just Google your name, Dean Foster, or what's the deal on that?
Sure, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, you can just punch in "Oops, Your Culture's Showing," and you can Google that, or go to a podcast server where you get your podcasts and Google that as well, and it'll pop right up, and you can listen to all of our episodes. Our latest episode just came out last week, where we talk about apologies around the world. Different cultures actually apologize differently, and how we can misunderstand what they're trying to say.
This is fascinating stuff, whether you're planning a trip abroad or not. Most informative conversation and fun, too, with Dean Foster. Dean, it was great to talk with you today. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with us here.
Well, Dave, it's been a pleasure. And anytime you or your listeners need information about a particular culture or what it's like to travel there, I'd love to chat further with you about it. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Dean. Bon voyage.
Bon voyage. Travel deeply, Dave.
Okay. So long now.
Bye-bye.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.